Hello, I'm Linor Modou. Welcome to Health Chat. According to the International Research on Cancer, more than 1.4 million people were diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2020, and over 375,000 lost their lives to the disease. It is the second most diagnosed cancer and the fifth leading cause of cancer death among men around the world. Researchers found that the mortality rates of prostate cancer across sub-Saharan Africa is 2.7 times higher than global averages in 2021. They say several factors might affect a man's risk of getting prostate cancer, including being over the age of 50. Additionally, prostate cancer develops more often in men of African ancestry than in men of other races. Let's go to Nigeria, where a walk for men was held recently in Lagos to raise awareness about prostate cancer and provide a free screening. Venust Alexandre has more.
Prostate cancer is the disease affecting men. There is a recommended screening process that can help detect the cancer early to increase the likelihood of survival. Nigeria's Dozi Mobwasi Foundation hosted the 5-kilometer walk with buses equipped with medical professionals doing free prostate exams. The man behind the prostate cancer screening in Nigeria is personally aware of the struggle that the average Nigerians or African men might face.
So my father, a couple of years ago, I think six years ago, you know, went to do a, you know, he went for a regular check, and then we discovered this issue, and then we went on straight to, you know, begin to deal with it. Of course, because we have the resources to do that. He's currently here in London. Of course, not everyone can be treated privately here in London. So we are making sure that we're able to give whatever that is available here in London, you know, to men in Nigeria.
Traditionally, in Nigeria, most initiatives for cancer have been directed towards female cancers, and men are reluctant to get a screening.
This is my first time of doing such a screening. I've not done it before. And everything was intact. And they told me they would send the results to my email. But I'm okay.
According to medical experts, when it is diagnosed early, prostate cancer is treatable with minimal or no side effect. The buses are equipped with everything medical professionals need to carry out the free screening, but Dozi wanted to go beyond just diagnostics.
We have just completed a proper hospital somewhere in Lagos where we can always refer those for treatment. So I'm sure at some point you can have access. We're happy to give you exclusive access into that hospital. We will expect to have that ready in December of this year.
According to medical country of origin information, one in four black men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. At least 5,000 men die due to prostate cancer every year in Nigeria. Venus Alexander for VOA News.
We asked some people what they thought about prostate cancer and when to get a screening test. Here are some reactions from Lagos, Nigeria and Kigali, Rwanda.
I'm indeed scared of prostate cancer because I'm a candidate to catching prostate cancer at the age of 53. However, given the economy we have living in Africa, the priority is always upkeep, food and the like. So testing for diseases may be a secondary issue, to tell you the truth. So because it's not cheap, testing for prostate cancer competes with our standards of living, yet the cost of living.
I have heard about prostate cancer. Although it normally affects people who are old, above 50 years, but also those who are in my age bracket. Yes, the disease scares me a lot because there is a certain period where it reaches, a certain stage where it reaches, and I can no longer have children.
And since we've started this service, we've actually had several people, okay, that have been positively diagnosed, you know, at an early stage. Detecting this early is key, okay, at the stage where it can be treated and they can live a very healthy and fruitful life.
At over 50, never for once do any screening for any cancerous thing. So this is an opportunity for me to get tested. And I think I feel cool and I feel okay with the whole exercise. I love the fact that I have to check some things about my system.
In Nampula, Mozambique, urologist Osmani Leon warns of the need to prevent and eliminate taboos that prevent men from going for prostate cancer screening. He says that currently prostate cancer is among the main cancers that leads to the death of men 40 years of age and older in the country. Take a listen.
According to health specialists in Mozambique, prostate cancer is among the most common and is one of the main causes of death from cancer in men over 40 years of age. One of the health sector's bets to control the disease is screening and treatment in cases of diagnosis, but few men go to the health unit to do the exams due to lack of information, fear, shame, and taboos.
Many men are actually afraid. I don't know if it's a myth or real cases. But many have this fear.
This disease is said to attack people with advanced age. For example, from 55 years onward, these people are always affected. But in my case, I never went to the health center to do any analysis ever. When it's not symptomatic, it's not possible to go to the clinic. It's only possible when the disease is symptomatic you that you can go to the health unit.
Over the past month, several mobilization campaigns were carried out for adherence to screening exams. And here in Nampula, at one such event, only 300 men came to the hospital, five of whom were diagnosed, says the urologist assigned to the Central Hospital of Nampula, Osmani Leon.
There are taboos of men that say, I'm a man, I can't do the rectal exam. And then he gets a disease, prostate cancer, and says, doctor, I want to live. And the doctor cannot do anything else because the cancer was diagnosed at a late stage, an advanced period of the disease, and it is very difficult.
According to Osmani, health professionals are concerned about the fact that most patients go to the hospital at an advanced stage of the disease, which makes it difficult to tackle it. Doctors such as Osmani ask men to get their health checkups regularly.
Every man over the age of 40 should have a prostate exam at least once a year. This doesn't take away your masculinity, but it has a great benefit because you won't end up with cancer. What we are looking for in medicine is prevention. The medicine of the future, preventive medicine.
Dr. Mark Hagenimana is acting director of Cancers Diseases Unit in Rwanda Biomedical Center. He discusses the challenges and opportunities in addressing prostate cancer in Africa.
Prostate cancer is more common in men who are over 50 years, African compared to American people from Europe, African are having more prostate cancer. And then it have been observed that people who are working in industries, especially chemical industries, they have a high risk of prostate cancer. Most of people that we are receiving in our tertiary hospitals, they are arriving at the last stage when the disease is metastatic, when treatment is not possible. Our treatment modalities are limited. So in Rwanda, we have a few urologists specialized in surgery. We have very few, and you are receiving a high number of patients compared to the capacity of human resources that you have. And also radiotherapy, it is good that in Rwanda you have radiotherapy that is used to treat most of the cases. But looking at the heavy workload of patients that you have, some people are not able to get treatment timely. What we are doing as the government of Rwanda, as a minister of health, to address those challenges. First of all, we're working hardly to increase awareness of population about prostate cancer so that they can come early. Secondly, we are improving health facility capacity to be able to diagnose prostate cancer early.
That was Dr. Mark Hagenimana, Acting Director of Cancer Diseases Unit in Rwanda Biomedical Center. The World Health Organization says Africa is witnessing a surge in outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases over the past year. Almost 17,000 cases of measles were recorded in the African region between January and March 2022, a 400% increase compared with the same period in 2021. Outbreaks of other vaccine-preventable diseases have also become more common, such as cholera and yellow fever. Observers say inequalities in accessing vaccines and disruptions by the COVID-19 pandemic are partly to blame. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Ebere Okereke, Technical Advisor at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change.
Dr. Ebere Okereke, thank you so much for joining us today. Experts are sounding the alarm on the resurgence of vaccine-preventable diseases like measles and cholera. What are some of the reasons for this trend, especially given that the diseases are preventable?
Specifically in Africa, we have always had a challenge with vaccine preventable diseases, that our health systems haven't been good enough to ensure that everybody who is eligible for vaccination gets those. So we have had annual outbreaks, cholera, for example, in the seasons, and our uptake of our coverage for measles has never quite reached that threshold where we interrupt and prevent outbreaks. However, in the last 2 years, as a consequence of the response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the pressure that's put on the very fragile health system we've had, routine immunizations for children, such as measles vaccinations, have dropped. And that is not just in Africa. That's been a global phenomenon. And as we've seen, there've therefore been outbreaks and emergence of these diseases, in particular in some regions where they haven't seen some of these vaccine-preventable diseases for quite some time. And it just goes to show how important it is that we maintain health systems that are resilient and able to deal with the pressures of an outbreak while maintaining routine services such as childhood immunization.
How does Africa fare in terms of access to those vaccines?
So there are a number of factors there. So we're talking about the endemic diseases, the infectious diseases we know about that happen year on year. We can predict what to expect and everything, and for most of which we have existing vaccines, not all, but for some of them. So like I mentioned, our health system's capacity to deliver vaccines routinely is not optimal. We have underinvestment in our health systems, and we are often reliant on donors to fund essential public health programs, including childhood immunization. So that's the first thing. And then secondly is the fact that we don't actually manufacture a significant amount of the pharmaceutical products that we need for diseases that are endemic and high burden here. Up till last year, when the African Union, Africa CDC convened a summit on vaccine manufacturing, we were only manufacturing 1% of the vaccines that we use in the on the continent. So I'm not talking about COVID here. I'm just talking about the everyday stuff, measles, mumps, rubella, BCG, even, which is one of the old cheap ones, yellow fever, etc. And yet the highest burden of some of these diseases sits in the continent. So why is that the issue, a case? It's predominantly because we haven't invested in the system. We haven't created an environment that is attractive for manufacturing to occur in the continent. There has been a lack of political will and financial investment in the ecosystem. We also need to recognize that globally, there wasn't an interest in actually creating a diversified pharmaceutical market. So almost all the pharmaceutical industries are concentrated in a very small number of countries, predominantly in the global north. And then you have manufacturing hubs, such as in China and India, who spew out the products that are designed and developed in mostly North America and Northern Europe. This means that we're always at the end of the list and the line for vaccines. We also, as a consequence of this lack of investment in the health system, we know we have a population of 1.4 billion on the continent. So there's a potential market, but we haven't actually created the demand. There are vaccines that are actually licensed and exist at the moment, which we don't currently use across the continent in our routine immunizations. Take, for example, hepatitis B vaccines or HPV vaccines. Those vaccines exist, but we're not using them. So it's a complex issue. And then, of course, the final challenge is actually getting vaccines from the port into people's arms, which requires infrastructure in terms of the health system. It requires information management system and trained people to make that happen. So we have weaknesses across the board, which we have to address individually and collectively to change that narrative.
So many weaknesses to address. Where do we start?
Well, what's that saying about, you know, to eat an elephant? How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? We've already started. So let's not, I wouldn't want to suggest that we've just been sitting, crossing our arms and twiddling our fingers and hoping things will fix themselves. We've had initiatives in the past decade trying to look at how we improve and expand pharmaceutical manufacturing on the continent. Some parts of the continent have done very well in delivering vaccines to their populations and have very high coverage rates, both for the traditional childhood immunizations, but more recent ones as well. So we need to learn from those success stories. And then we need to look at what is missing that makes it difficult for us to grow a manufacturing industry for vaccines and other medical products, therapeutics, diagnostics on the continent. And that then requires a whole systems approach. We need to look at the whole ecology of what it takes to go from creating a vaccine to getting it into people's arms. And some of that work has started already through the Partnerships for Africa Vaccine Manufacturing, which the AU launched just about nearly 2 years ago now, which is looking at, okay, how do we create the ecosystem to make it easier for manufacturing to occur on the continent? We need to engage with the global partners to actually recognize the importance of diversifying market manufacturing. So we don't have the experience we had with COVID, where there wasn't enough manufacturing capacity for the vaccines when the need was global. And therefore, African countries and other low-income countries ended up being at the end of the line. And we're only now catching up with availability to vaccinate our citizens now that the more wealthy countries have reached, you know, 3-4 doses over for their populations. But there is also a requirement within that for us to actually take personal accountability. We need to invest in health, in the health systems, in the research and development so that we are part of the solution, not just waiting at the end of the queue with a begging bowl.
When we saw the experience with COVID-19 and monkeypox recently with regards to access to vaccine, looking forward, where do we go from here? How do we make sure that Africa is prepared for the next crisis?
We are part of a global ecosystem, so we need to see to have the global ecosystem recognize the challenges, and that the challenges experienced by Africa are global challenges. And like the Director General of WHO says, Dr. Tedros says, we're not safe until everyone is safe. So take, for example, with monkeypox. We've had monkeypox outbreaks with increasing burden of disease in West Africa, and particularly in Nigeria, for some years now. And the leaders of the public health system in Nigeria had been calling for more research and for vaccine development. And attention wasn't paid to it until it became a cross boundaries and cross continents, and all of a sudden the interest is focused. So how do we change the narrative? We have to grow our own research and development capacity. Currently, our governments collectively on the continent invest less than 1% in research into pharmaceutical products, 1% of their GDP. So we need to increase investment. We need to train the scientists and the pharmaceutical experts and the researchers and health professionals who are involved in assessing the needs, designing the vaccines, and being part of the solution. We need to create an enabling environment for international companies to partner with African manufacturers to manufacture here. To do that, we need to understand the size of the market. We need to understand, make sure that there's funding available. We need to ensure that the manufacturing sits alongside the research and development and the people, the talent, the workforce that need to work in those industries. And then we also need to create the demand. National countries have to identify what the burdens are in their countries, set strategies to ensure that vaccines that get to their shores can be delivered to the people who need them. So we need to create demand. And to do that collectively, we as citizens of the continent and the 55 countries that are part of the Africa Union need to hold our governments to account. We need to actually remind them that health is not a drain on resources. Health is an investment, and it's a necessary investment if we are to continue with economic development.
So, Dr. Eberi, what is the best case scenario in terms of vaccine manufacturing on the continent? Is it a manufacturing plant in each region, in each country? What are we talking about?
What we're talking about is a manufacturing industry that is sustainable and viable. That is never going to be every country manufacturing. We don't need every country manufacturing. What we need is manufacturing that's tailored to the continental needs, that creates enough capacity to serve our needs and provide some resilience and wiggle room, capacity for emergency, in an emergency, if we need to scale up and produce a new vaccine, having some wriggle space, not just for Africa, but part of the global market. It's really important that we don't go down the path of thinking that every country needs to manufacture their own, because it's never going to be cost effective to do that, and we'll end up with lots of white elephants. So what we've done through the Partnership for Africa Vaccine Manufacturing is to develop a continental strategy, which identifies which vaccines we want to see manufactured on the continent, what sort of technology we should like to see, aiming for a spread, a diversity of technology so that we have resilience in the system, and also looking at different parts along the value chain, whether we're starting from the research and development all the way to just the fill and finishing packaging. So we need to have that dispersed and diverse approach. We also need some geographical diversity. What we don't want is to put all our eggs in one country's basket, for example, which will create the same sort of challenge as we experienced with COVID, when all the vaccines that were supposed to be supplied through COVAX were being manufactured in India. And when the Delta variant created the big surge of cases there, they stopped exporting. So we need to ensure that we have enough diversity to provide that resilience, but not so much that it becomes financially unviable. So I'm not going to put a finger in and say it's one or two or five, but it's definitely not anywhere near the dozens. It should be lower than that.
You know, one of the issues you touched on is being able to put those vaccines in people's arms. And we've seen a lot of times where skepticism and misconceptions and the lack of trust have prevented people from getting vaccinated. This is the case for COVID-19 in some countries, that they had to throw away the vaccine after the CDC, the Africa CDC and partners fought so hard to get the vaccines to the countries. And now some countries had to discard of them because people were not getting the shots. How do we address that?
Right. I think we need to recognize it's not so straightforward or so simple. We live in a global village, and with social media, for example, misinformation is spreading faster than accurate information, and people are picking up information from across the world. So let's make one thing clear. Conspiracy theories, vaccine apathy, hesitancy is not an African problem. It's a global one. Unfortunately, because of the delay in us getting access to COVID vaccine particularly, we've actually had time for those conspiracy theories to embed and create the situation that you've just described. But we also need to recognize that part of the reason we did surveys at the beginning, when vaccines were only just on the horizon, that demonstrated that there was a lot of interest in receiving those vaccines across the continent. But it took so long to get them, and people just thought, well, if it was that important, you would have got it to us sooner. So that was one thing. In terms of the wastage of vaccine, there were a whole combination of factors. Like I said, we need to not just get the vaccine, we need to have the mechanisms to get it from the port into arms, which requires a health system that's robust and logistics that work and manpower to deliver the vaccine. Now, in parts of the continent, it's not as robust as we would like. But that was made worse by the richer countries in the global north bought up bulk vaccines that they ended up not needing, and vaccines were donated very generously, rather haphazardly at the beginning, without coordination and with very short shelf lives. So if you send a vaccine to a country that doesn't have the logistical capacity to get it into arms, no matter how willing they are and the shelf life is short, those vaccines expire and end up being destroyed. So it's not entirely because there was a lack of interest in being vaccinated here. There were a whole complex ecosystem. Now, what we need to be better at globally, not just in the African continent, is planning and anticipation. If you have a proper understanding of what the market can absorb, what is going to be produced at what pace, and this isn't just about COVID, this is about vaccines in general, and then how you ensure that you only get what you need in the time that you can use it before shelf lives expire and all that, then we're less likely to see this sort of narrative. So like I said, it's very complex. We have limitations ourselves, but it was also as a consequence of some of the global decisions that were made early on in response to the production of vaccines and countries hoarding them and then releasing them at very late note and very short notice.
And before we wrap, Dr. Okereke, you are the technical advisor at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. When we talk about global change, what do we talk about?
Well, we talk about equity, bottom line. It's about equity. It's about creating a world where the resources that are available are equitably accessible to everybody. We know that there is enough resource generated across the globe for the quality of life for individuals across the globe to be better than it is in some. But the ability and the opportunity to access those opportunities are limited in some regions over others. So what the Tony Blair Institute does, not just in the health space, is work with governments to improve their ability to deliver to their citizens, to their electorate, to improve their economy, their development, their health, so that they have more equitable access to the global pie. So that does require using technology. It requires training people for the right, you know, the right skill set for the right problem. It primarily starts first and foremost from a political commitment. And this is why I always come back to say that it doesn't matter what institutions like TBI and others and aid agencies or UN bodies do. We as ordinary citizens in African countries need to recognize and accept that health is a right. And as a consequence, our governments who we elect have a duty to enable us to have access to that health, and we need to hold them to account. We have elections coming up over the next few weeks across the country, across the continent. We need to ask our politicians to step up.
Finally, the second International Conference on Public Health is set to take place this week in Rwanda. What is the significance of this gathering?
Right. This is the second one. The first International Conference on Public Health in Africa was held virtually last year. What this is about convening African experts, researchers, public health strategists, scientists, civil service, politics together to collectively address the challenges for public health on our continent and create the solutions collectively. We need to be in the driving seat of the solutions for our own problems. And this conference creates an opportunity for us to look at Africa at the crossroads. We're coming to emerging from a pandemic and looking at what's next. In addition to the pandemic, we still have a heavy burden of endemic diseases, not just infectious diseases, non-communicable diseases, the incidence of cancer, heart disease is increasing on the continent. And the aim of the conference is to bring together the best minds to create the solutions together. It's going to be exciting to have so many. We're looking at thousands of public health scientists, researchers, practitioners, political leaders, civil service representatives gathering together to co-create a solution for the continent.
Dr. Ebere Okereke, it was such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Ebere Okereke, Technical Advisor at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Khmudu in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.